This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, on this 30th anniversary of the Rome General Peace Accords, which ended the Mozambique Civil War, what is the state of play in Mozambique? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The Rome General Peace Accords, officially known as the General Peace Accords or Acordo Geral de Paz in Portuguese, was a peace treaty signed between the government of Mozambique and the opposition RENAMO, or the Mozambican National Resistance, ending the Mozambican Civil War on October 4, 1992. RENAMO was founded in May 1977 with active support from the then Rhodesian Central Intelligence Organization from anti-communist dissidents opposed to Mozambique's ruling Frelimo Party, the Liberation Front of Mozambique, which enjoyed military and economic backing from the then Soviet Union and China. Frelimo began as a nationalist movement fighting for independence from Portuguese colonial rule. What began as a promising end to the Mozambican Civil War has lately deteriorated as we witness the development of a violent insurgency in the nation's northernmost province of Cabo Delgado. Cabo Delgado is the site of what is considered the second largest gas field in the world. However, as early as 2007, the International Crisis Group reports that frustrated youth dominated by ethnic Makua began denouncing the authority of local Muslim religious leaders. By the mid-2010s, ethnic Muani militants joined the opposition, but their discontent was also motivated by their economic disenfranchisement amid the discovery of rubies and natural gas. They also resented the influence of liberation-era generals who have business interests in Cabo Delgado and are drawn from the Mozambican President Philippe Nyusi's Makonde ethnic group. Further adding to grievances, authorities reportedly expelled artisanal miners from commercial mining concessions in early 2017. What could have been a major windfall for the entire population of the country, the discovery and development of major mineral and hydrocarbon deposits has fueled resentment and now an insurrection to which foreign militants, including the Islamic State, are now involved. Militant attacks and security force operations in Cabo Delgado province have now claimed more than 3,000 lives while displacing hundreds of thousands of people. For more on the 30th anniversary of the Rome General Accords and how the political situation in Mozambique has deteriorated since those heady days, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Alex Vines is director of the Africa Program at Chatham House. That's a prominent London-based think tank. And Anne Pitcher, she's professor of political science and Afro-American and African studies at the University of Michigan. And both guests join me via Zoom. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Let me begin with you, Alex Vines. We spoke to you a little over a month ago to talk about the results of the Angolan elections. Now let's switch to Mozambique on this anniversary, the 30th of the Rome General Peace Accords, as they are known in Portuguese, Acordo Geral de Paz. Remind us of the cause of the civil war to begin with, and then the centrality of Italy and the Vatican in particular in bringing the conflict to an end.
Well, as you mentioned, Carol, the civil war had its roots in a southern Africa that had a minority regime in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, so the Ian Smith regime, and then also apartheid minority rule white South Africa. And so the civil war really spread from 1977, once the Rhodesians had created a coherent insurgency group called the Mozambique National Resistance, later called RENAMO, and that conflict spread across Mozambique to the point that by the early 90s, the Mozambican government had to call in foreign militaries to assist it. So it had the Zimbabwean military involved, it had the Tanzanian military and the Malawian one. And there were quite a few areas of Mozambique that were certainly not at all under state control. They were kind of no-go zones, or you had kind of rebel RENAMO control. Therefore, there was clearly not going to be a military solution to this war. And so from the late 80s, you had a peace process emerging, which, as you mentioned, the Catholic Church played a prominent role, particularly through a Catholic lay organization based out of Rome called the San Egidio Community. And that's why the General Peace Accord 30 years ago was signed in Rome, because you had both the Catholic Church involved, but you also had the Italian government involved. And there was an official Italian mediator, an Italian politician called Mario Raffaelli, who was very instrumental also in nudging the peace process forward. And so 30 years ago, Mozambique was in a hurting stalemate militarily. It was also experiencing a god-awful drought that was really stretching both the government, also particularly the rebels RENAMO. And so those things also, in addition to the end of the Cold War and changes in a particularly apartheid South Africa that were developing too, resulted in the Rome General Peace Accord and the end of a civil war in Mozambique that had lasted since 1977. And bear in mind, the country got its independence in 1975.
Well, thanks for that excellent background, Alex. And before I turn to Anne, I'd like to get you to react to 30 years on since those times. And there were heady days. I recall myself being a part of what was called ONUMAS, the UN peacekeeping mission, back in 1993. It looked like things would be very promising for Mozambique. How do you see it 30 years on?
Yeah, well, I mean, Carol, you were there, you were working there, for, as I remember. So, yeah, there was great hope in after the General Peace Accord. There was a 2 years transition process. Originally, it was planned for one, pending multi-party elections. And so the UN operation that came into place, led by Aldo Aiello, he was another Italian politician who became the special representative of the UN Secretary General at the time, oversaw demobilization, reintegration, and the creation of a joint army, the Forces Armadas de Defesa de Mozambique, and then elections, Mozambique's first ever multi-party elections, which I was there. I was a UN election officer based in Gaza province and prepared the elections, and it was marvelous. It was a marvelous moment. So there are two things, I think, that reflecting on this. One is that the peace more or less held for 30 years in large parts of Mozambique. So it was pretty successful, but there were areas of increased tension. So RENAMO went back to targeted armed violence for a couple of years from 2013 until they reached a second agreement with the Mozambican government, which was in August 2019. And then, as you said in your intro, there's another new conflict that's developed in the far northern province of Cabo Delgado. So Mozambique is not completely peaceful, but what it doesn't have still now, 30 years after the Rome General Peace Accord, thankfully, is a national civil war. And that did end 30 years ago.
Ann Pitcher, there is no national civil war, but there have been setbacks. I'd like to get you to reflect on these 30 years and tell us your thoughts and perhaps talk about some of the setbacks.
One thing I wanted to go back to was the context for that war between RENAMO and FRELIMO. And the context was very much that at a global level, the Cold War was at its height. And FRELIMO had just fought a long armed struggle against the Portuguese colonial regime and had moved decidedly to the left during the liberation struggle. By 1977, it called itself a Marxist-Leninist state, and that attracted the opponents in the Cold War, the United States and the Soviet Union, to that part of the world. And the United States was very supportive of the backing of South Africa and the minority regime in Rhodesia for RENAMO because of the context of the Cold War. So that, I think, is an important element of why that war started when it did, but also why it ended when it did. It ended in a stalemate, and I agree with Alex that the drought was a contributing factor, but it also ended at a time when the Cold War had ended. And so I think that that's an important element, because part of the post-war change that occurred in Mozambique was not only that the General Peace Accord mandated multi-party competition, but also that Frelimo adopted a new constitution, and that constitution reduced references to socialism and also adopted a market economy. And almost immediately, Frelimo, after the peace accord, began to privatize many state-owned enterprises in the country. So I think that that was also a major change that occurred following the end of the war. But if we look at the last 30 years, what I called in 2002, I think still applies now, which is that because the GPA, the General Peace Accord, left Frelimo largely in control and did not execute some of the provisions that were supposed to integrate RENAMO more into the government and into the military, Frelimo has managed to control the transition. And I referred to this in 2002 as transformative preservation, that Frelimo has been able to, yes, transform the country, to build up the private sector, to sell a lot of state-owned enterprises, but it's been able to do that very much on its own terms and very much in a way that many, many Frelimo politicians have benefited from the transformation of the economy to a more market-driven economy. Carol, you mentioned at the beginning that a number of generals, and they're all connected to Frelimo, and many of them are Makande from the north of the country, a number of generals have been able to capture the mining sector and to run gemstone operations and to get involved in gas. And it's striking to me how many beneficiaries of the transition to a private sector economy have been from the Frelimo party. I also want to say that it's unfortunate that the GPA did not call for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I've had a number of people tell me over the years that the conflict between RENAMO and Frelimo did not end in 1992. Many people were still bitter, resentful, and concerned about what had happened. They didn't know what had happened to certain relatives or to family members, and that a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, such as occurred in South Africa after the transition to democracy in 1994, would have brought some closure to that terrible period of conflict.
Ann Pitcher, thank you for your terrific analysis, placing the conflict within the Cold War lens, as well as talking about, obviously, the Marxist roots of Frelimo in its fight against the colonial Portuguese. But we'll have more on all of this in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. And joining me via Zoom are Alex Vines, director of the Africa Program at Chatham House, that's a London-based think tank, and Ann Pitcher, from whom you just heard. She's professor of political science and Afro-American and African studies at the University of Michigan. We're discussing the current state of play in Mozambique on the 30th anniversary of the Rome Accord. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also find us on any of your favorite podcast apps. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel and connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a new Facebook follower, Olubisi Adeola from Oyo, Oyo State in Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Alex Vines. To both of you, bravo for your excellent context for what we're discussing, the 30th anniversary of the Rome General Peace Accords in Mozambique. Let's turn now to characterizing relations between RENAMO and Frelimo over these years. Alex, has RENAMO evolved from its roots as this former creation of Rhodesia to becoming a more legitimate political party with a constituency? What is their constituency? How would you characterize their evolving over these years in relationship with Frelimo?
So RENAMO has evolved. It was originally a puppet organization, a branch of Rhodesian destabilization. It was then foster parented by apartheid South Africa once the Rhodesia regime collapsed and there was majority rule with independence of the new Zimbabwe that occurred in 1980. But what we're now seeing, including research by experts and academics, is that RENAMO clearly was beginning to try and change and develop its own Mozambican national identity by the mid-1980s. And gradually that continued, although the Rome General Peace Accord was still a shock for it. The majority of RENAMO leaders had primary education. Some of them had secondary education. Very few of them had gone through to any tertiary education at all. And so they really struggled, to be honest. And this is where I think Anne's very right. It was a very imbalanced situation that they then entered into in a democratic context, including entering into a national assembly, a parliament, where Frelimo was well-educated, well-connected, globalized. And these guys, a lot of them had just come out of the bush. And what they knew was about being guerrilla fighters, not about being peacetime politicians. And gradually over time, RENAMO developed more statecraft of politics. But I think it had always struggled in fully transforming itself from the roots of being a guerrilla movement into being a modern political opposition party in Southern Africa. And until, well, still ongoing, they did maintain an armed militia, basically. There is a demobilization process that is still underway from the new agreement that was signed between them and the government in 2019, which is for 5,200 ex-RENAMO combatants are being demobilized and reintegrated at the moment and bringing their firearms and weapons with them. So finally, I think we're having a situation now where RENAMO is becoming less of a political party with an armed militia, which was used to try and negotiate and renegotiate better deals with the Mozambican government, meaning the party of government Frelimo. I've written about this. I call it elite bargaining. I think that's what, from 1992, 30 years ago, until today, that's basically what we've seen, that there's been elite bargaining. And RENAMO, when it's had significant setbacks, then returned to targeted armed violence or protest to try and extract a new sort of deal. But it was a very paternalistic one and obviously not a democratic one. My regret in 30 years, I don't know what Anne thinks, is that there isn't a third political party that's emerged that doesn't come out of a history of violence. We're still really waiting for that. There was a third party called MDM, but it did pretty badly in the last election, and its leader died fairly recently, and I'm not sure how well it will do in the next election.
Anne Pitcher, I'd like to get your take on RENAMO's evolution, if you can describe it that way, from a guerrilla organization to a more legitimate political party with any kind of constituency. You have talked about the shortcomings of Frelimo. What about RENAMO? How do you see the relationship between the two parties?
Well, I'd like to point out that in 1999, RENAMO nearly pulled it off. They nearly won the presidency. Alfonso de la Cama, the former leader of RENAMO, alleged that he had in fact won. And there are a few scholars who suggest that in fact he did win the presidency. And RENAMO did very well capturing seats in parliament in 1999. And I think that motivated the party to try to improve its operation on the ground, to build up local party networks on the ground. But in many ways, I think Alfonso de la Cama was his own worst enemy. He didn't tolerate any RENAMO party agents who attracted their own popular bases. So he tended to eliminate his rivals and move people around within the party or shove them out of the party. And I think that that really hurt RENAMO during the 2000s. I mean, they had this brief period, I think, after the 1999 elections when they did try to expand their bases and reinforce their local party networks. But I think that became increasingly difficult during the 2000s. And part of that was also the coming to power of Armando Guebuza, who was elected president in 2004. And Guebuza had been a longtime loyalist of the Frelimo party, served as interior minister in the first government after independence. Samora Machel was the president then, and Guebuza was the minister of the interior. He was known as a strong man, was very tough, enforcing regulations and identifying so-called enemies of the regime after 75. He came to power through a democratic election in 2004. And I think his administration from 2004 to 2014 just took a much stricter stance against RENAMO and was more determined than the previous administration under Joaquim Chissano in trying to reduce RENAMO's popularity. But I do think RENAMO tried to build up a popular base and to increase its membership. But Duglama, however charismatic he may have been with his own supporters, was also someone who, as Alex said, not internally democratic and couldn't tolerate any rivals within the party. RENAMO now, I think, is a lot weaker. The current leader does not have the appeal or the charisma of Dhlakama or the military experience and discipline that Dhlakama had. So I do see it as a much weaker party, less threatening to Frelimo. And yes, there's no third party that can really challenge the ruling party.
In the very few minutes we have left to conclude, Alex Vines, how concerned are you about what is going on, the unrest and the insurgency in Cabo Delgado, which started, you know, as homegrown socioeconomic grievances and ethno-religious differences, now morphed into this insurgency with foreign Islamist militants linked to the Islamic State, which appear now to threaten not only the stability of Mozambique, but perhaps southeastern Africa as well? This all over gas fields and potential boon for the entire country being apparently mismanaged. What does it say about the government's inability to transform the country and benefit all of the people, including those in the north who have been marginalized?
Well, it is the fifth anniversary since armed violence appeared in Cabo Delgado this month. So that's another anniversary to reflect on. And my view is that Cabo Delgado's crisis is a sub-regional one. So it's linked to problems that are in Tanzania. It's not just about Mozambique. But a lot of the solutions to the problem are in Mozambique. And that is to do with inequality. That is to do with unaccountability of local elites. It's to do with how to create livelihoods for pools of young people. And it's also now about how do you cope with increased insecurity and increased radicalization amongst parts of the population along the coast, in particular in northern Cabo Delgado. There are no easy solutions to this. This is going to be a long-term challenge now for the Mozambican government. But the solutions are all, in the end, developmental. And they are also, I think, about how Mozambique tries to develop its state-building project going into the future. What I think a conclusion from the 30 years of peace with RENAMO is that Mozambique requires more political pluralism, more openness for debate and discussion, and more local level governance. Those have been seriously lacking in Cabo Delgado, which I think provided a context for this nasty new insurgency to develop.
And Pitcher, in the last few minutes, you get the last word.
Well, I want to say that in the 1990s, after the signing of the GPA and after the first democratic elections in 1994, there was this brief period in which Mozambique was on its knees. It was looking for a lot of external and domestic support to rebuild and recover. And there was this real period of openness when the leadership was interested in the views of ordinary people. And I think that that moment needs to be recreated when there are more options on the ground for local participation in the future development of the country. And if I were advising the Mozambican government right now, I would say create as many venues as possible for some kind of participation in a national development project. As the conflict continues and the prospects that gas production might be limited because of that conflict, the Mozambican government is coming around to the idea that they really have to listen to and invest in local communities in Cabo Delgado.
For now, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Alex Vines, Director of the Africa Program at Chatham House, and Ann Pitcher, Professor of Political Science and Afro-American and African Studies at the University of Michigan. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.